Are you looking to be of service? Would you like to do something kind for humanity? Help people that may be less fortunate than you? Go to babasfeedproject.love. It is an amazing organization. They do food kits and clothes kits to underprivileged and groups in Northern India. If you have any questions, you can contact Hanuman, who is an outreach ambassador, on his Facebook at Hanuman Das Love. Really look at this website. It is a great website. They're even updating more and more things. You can donate there. They even have some little trinkets and things that you can buy that the proceeds will go to helping the organization. Again, this organization is Baba's Feed Project. The website is babasfeedproject.love. Much love, family. Namaste. Hello, everyone. This is the Hanuman Healing Hour. How are you all doing tonight? I hope the listeners are doing good. We have a really, really special guest with us tonight. He is a chaplain who, well, I'm not going to tell too much of it, but he has a musical, a play, and this, the concept of this is just beautiful. So without any further ado, we have Benjamin Kitzman on. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good. Hanuman, I'm going to give it another try. It's Kintish.
Kintish.
It rhymes with mintish. There you go.
Beautiful. There you go. Okay. That's easier.
Cool, I'm cool. Guessing you spend a lot of time in your life explaining how your beautiful name is pronounced, so no worries.
There's a lot of times. Once I hear it, like, properly, and I say it a few times, I'm good. You know what I mean? So.
You're a quick study. Glad to hear it. Yeah. Thanks for having me on. And I so enjoyed our initial conversation. I'm really delighted to see how this one unfolds.
Yes, definitely. That was really nice. And I definitely enjoyed not only talking to you, but just doing all the looking at your musical and looking at all the things that you're doing. In my history, there's a big emphasis on dealing with the idea, the concept, and even the practice of death, right? And I think that your musical is really just right along the lines of that type of thing. You know what I mean? Not from any type of like morbid any means by anything, but you know, just the way that you make people have a smile, make them laugh, you know what I mean? I think that's really beautiful.
Hey, thanks for those kind words, Hanuman, and maybe we'll come back to that a little bit more later, but I'm glad it's made an impression on you.
Well, would you mind kind of just telling the audience a little bit about yourself, how you came, you know, kind of came to this idea, maybe some of the steps that you kind of, you know, can remember fumbling and stuff like that, that people would be able to look to, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I like to tell people that I've had a little bit of a zigzag path in terms of my professional life. So I was always involved in two big areas of interest coming up, my Jewish faith and my interest in music and related kinds of creative arts. So music and drama. So as a young person, I was into it. Very talented young singer, even considered a conservatory education, did that for 1 year before transferring to just, quote, regular college at Brown University, where I did a Judaic studies degree. So I always had this twin interest in Judaic culture, my Judaism as I expressed it and as my community expressed it. And then I always loved music, right? I was a talented singer, and I had this the skill to sing beautifully and to move people with my voice. So for all of my life, I've tried to find ways to use my singing for enjoyment for myself and pleasure and inspiration for others.
Right.
So that's a little thumbnail of my career, which included training to become a cantor, as well as working as a music teacher along the way, a cantor, an education director. And as it pertains to tonight's conversation and the hospice musical, I became a hospice chaplain along the way. The story behind that was real simple. I had become a congregational cantor. That's a music minister in a Jewish synagogue. And I found that a lot of our congregants were rather elderly, meaning that there was going to be a lot of hospital visits and maybe hospice visits, certainly a lot of bereavement support leading up to and after funerals and whatnot. And I felt a little bit out of my league. It just seemed like a lot. And so I thought to myself, I think I'm going to need some chaplaincy training. And I found a great program where the home base was at a residential hospice. And so we had a class once a week, sort of graduate level style training. And chaplaincy, for all of you listening, if you don't know the term, a chaplain is like a religious professional who is almost therapist adjacent, but let's say provides spiritual care to people in their time of need. Famously in MASH, there was a priest, so he was the Catholic chaplain for that platoon of soldiers. Usually in big hospitals, you'll have one, if not a whole group of chaplains on staff. So if, you know, someone is killed, God forbid, in a car crash, and the mother is bereft in the emergency room, she can say, I want to speak to a chaplain, right? And in her moment of crisis, a religious person will come and help her. So that's what a chaplain is. And in hospice care, a chaplain does a lot of work, of course, supporting those seriously ill and dying, as well as their loved ones. So the main ministry is what we would call patient support and support of loved ones. But then beyond when people die, chaplains, especially if you're working full-time at a hospice, a chaplain might also be involved, say, with a grief support group or running a quarterly community memorial service, right? So it's not only the one-on-one bedside visits and so forth that a chaplain does. They sometimes do community education or community events and so forth. But the majority of the work of a chaplain, to be clear, is private. It is one-on-one or one-on-two if you've got a loved one and a plus one next to the bed. And in my musical, what I was inspired to do, I had these beautiful visits bedside, and I was hearing stories from people. And if they weren't talking, I would hear stories from their loved ones. So one night driving home, I called up my wife. I said, honey, I think these stories, they want to be songs.
Uh-huh.
And she said, without missing a beat, get writing tonight. So that night I got one of those black and white. Yeah, I got one of those black and white composition books, you know, like the kids have in school. Yep. That's my preferred vessel for songwriting. So I got that one. What's that?
I'm the same way. To be honest, I have one right here.
Nice. Yeah. So I got one out and I started writing the song that would become Will It Still Snow When I'm Gone, which is, I think, one of the best songs in the show. Borrowed the title from a poem written by my mother-in-law. But the concept of the song came to me rather quickly. I mean, again, loosely inspired by the poem, but
right.
The idea is a person dreaming about life after their life has ended. So the hook, Will It Still Snow When I'm Gone? It's like if you're dying in summer, you think to yourself, I'm never going to see winter again. Is it going to still be snowing after I die?
Snow, yeah.
And I think a lot of, I've shared this song over the years with different groups, and people usually find it rather moving. And I think part of it is it expresses a really central truth for people. You know, there's so much uncertainty about our death and our mortality, what happens to us when we go, and all of that. And I'll tell you that if the main task of a chaplain in hospice care is to provide spiritual support, the main cause of spiritual distress is deeply complicated feelings about mortality and death and dying, both among the people in the bed, and oftentimes the plus ones or twos or threes. Right? Sometimes I remember many times over meeting with a couple where the person who's dying is a lot healthier about their mortality than the loved one who's clutching their hand. And when that's happening, a lot of times the biggest job of the chaplain and the social worker and the nurses is to try to get the plus one, the loved one, to get to a place of a little bit healthier acceptance so that they can say the magic words, "It's okay if you need to go." It's surprising to people to hear, but yes, I've heard this over and over and over again. People kind of holding on until given permission by the right person, and then they let go and they die.
I was actually going to ask, so in your opinion, do you see that when the family is in distress about it, the person tries to hold on longer?
I've not observed that firsthand, but I think it is a known phenomenon that a dying person can ease into their death when they are comfortable in terms of managing symptoms, as well as they're comfortable with the fact of it, right?
They're
You know, the
accepting
famous, that's right, acceptance is the magic word for sure. So the famous stages of grief that everyone talks about, that Dr. Kubler-Ross wrote about, a lot of people don't know, but the initial version of her writing actually had to do with observing sick and dying people. So those stages were originally observed in seriously ill people who were going through those stages, including ultimately, it's not resolution, but it's like reconciliation and acceptance. So how do you get there? You get there by saying to yourself, like, okay, here we are, and I'm here, and I'm gonna be dying now. And like, those words sound rather simple and maybe even a little bit flippant as I say it that way, but it's really I remember you and I were chatting a little bit in our pre-call. I sort of paraphrased some Buddhist wisdom, and I giggled because I was paraphrasing it by adding too many words, because you know I'm not Buddhist, I just say too many words to do that. But the wisdom is right there, that's all about acceptance with where you are and who you are in that moment.
And what's going on in that exact moment, right?
Say again?
And what is like recognizing the reality of what's going on in the exact moment, right? You're aware that, okay, yes, now I'm dying. I'm sick and I'm about to not be here anymore. And you really have to do that kind of as a, okay, this is what's going on thing, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, like the one of the songs in the full-length version of the play is basically a painful anthem of acceptance. And it goes, I am here now. I don't know how. I am dying. So I'm trying to be here now. And it's like, it's a real heartbreaker because it's sung by a young man early in the play who dies even before intermission. And but for him and for so many people like him in real life, not just the fiction version on stage, but there's this very upsetting reality if you are a youngish person, someone who is perceived as strong or healthy, who is all of a sudden stricken with a disease, and you're like, it doesn't make sense. I was healthy. Let me tell you a funny version of this. So when I did my chaplaincy training second year, I worked at an old age home, or I guess they call it elder care facility now. Old age would be like passe. Elder care facility, and one of the floors I worked was a rehab floor. So this would be older people who fell, most often broke their hip or a serious leg break, so much so that they need a major surgery and then they need to be in a rehab bed, like a hospital bed for a few days, if not even a few weeks, because breaking a hip is really serious. So time and time again, I'd have conversations with people where it was like, I felt great. So it would be like some person in a hospital bed telling me.
Are you identified with the body? Does your body hurt? Do you take medications for pain? Are you like me and may just be tired of big pharma? Or possibly are also in recovery and don't want to go back to that old lifestyle you lived? Socratic Solutions can help. They are a local Kratom company who also does shipping. They have lab verified and tested Kratom in addition to other different types of natural pain medication and relief. If interested, visit their website at www.socraticsolutions.us or email my man Ryan, the owner, at info@socraticsolutions.us. Namaste, family.
I was talking a little bit about some of the meditative moments of hospice where, right. So, oh, and just being injured, right. So the funny story is all these people who I met who were telling me, despite appearances to the contrary, that they're like, they felt like young older people. And they had just been playing tennis or been on a cruise a week earlier, and everything was good until they broke their hip. And I was like, yeah, that happened, and that's awful. And here we are. Right? And honestly, that sometimes that phrase, here we are, is so important and so painful. So the song I described from my play was this young kid who was struggling with the very fact of him being stuck in this bed. And it's a real tearjerker of a song, but anyone can relate who's ever been ill when they wanted to be healthy, missing out on things. Even if it's not life threatening. The last time I had a very serious injury, it was a snowboard crash. Thank God I only wrecked my elbow, because that can go real bad. But holy crap, I missed out, a month of teaching a job that I loved at the time. And I missed out, obviously, the rest of the snowboard season. And when I talked to the chaplain at the time, she heard me kind of minimize my suffering. And she said, listen, you're in a lot of pain physically because you've got this terrible broken arm and you're going to get the surgery. And you're dealing with disappointment, which is its own kind of loss. And I was like, oh, this is, by the way, one of the moments where I saw the magic of good chaplaincy work. That it's not just going in, being quiet and saying a prayer, but it's really interaction, teasing out kind of the important themes of a person's story, especially if they are themes of suffering or distress. And then the chaplain style is at the end of the meeting or at the end of the visit to offer a prayer. And if the person takes it, to use what we call spontaneous prayer, meaning made up on the spot prayer, to lift up what the person has said in a way that is prayerful, like literally in the structure of a prayer, but also makes the person in the room feel like their concerns have been heard and have been elevated with that sort of magical, I mean, I call it the magical special holy sauce. if you and I have a meal together and we enjoy the bread, it'll be a nice experience. But if we pause for a moment and say a blessing over the bread, as some Jewish people do, and we thank God for all the miracles involved in the creation of the bread, like, it might bring us to a slightly more elevated place. It might. I don't know if it will. But those customs and those prayers, I think they do offer potential for us to have moments where we're just a little bit closer to some sort of holy plane. I
agree.
That's part of the holy work of the chaplain is to offer prayerful moments and to offer a little bit of respite and relief for those suffering, those in pain.
And I really agree. A lot of the stuff you were talking about, especially the being in the now, like what you were quoting from your song, that actually comes, the way it comes to me is through one of my teachers, Ram Dass. He's a yogi and Hindu and all this other stuff. And his literal saying, for lack of a better term, is be here now, right? He got really popular off of that and everything. And really it's telling you, just like you were saying, you know, if you're even starting to go towards that place, right, of not being on this level anymore, you start to understand that really all the other stuff that was going on does not matter, because right now you're about to be leaving. And I don't know, maybe you can kind of expand on it, but it seems to me that people have a hard time sometimes with allowing the reality that they're stuck to, that, like, I'm a grandmother, I'm a grandfather, things like that, hinder them from kind of moving on peacefully, safely, whatever you want to call it, right? So I don't know if maybe you've seen a lot of things like that.
Yeah, well, you're identifying, or you highlighted how people as patients, they bring to the hospital bed or hospice bed different identities. And those identities, if I'm getting your question right, imply obligation and, I guess, in a certain sense, a covenantal relationship back and forth with the loved ones, most famously with spouses. Right. It's so hard. I've ministered in my chaplaincy role to a lot of beautiful spouses who love their person so much and struggle so mightily to let go. And in some cases, it's the person in the bed who's struggling mightily to let go. I alluded earlier in my comments to how often it is the plus one who is having such a hard time being ready to let go. But whoever it is, yes, an acceptance of the reality, including a bleak prognosis, is essential. I mean, I haven't given you, I gave you a definition of chaplaincy, so I might as well throw in the one for hospice. Hospice is a medical care or that is provided for people at the end of their lives after two doctors have concluded they have 6 months or fewer to live. So you can't get into hospice care just for being old, and you can't go to hospice care, say, after you've got a gunshot wound to the chest after a robbery. Right? Hospice is very specific for certain kinds of basically slow-moving terminal diseases, cancer most famously, but I've helped people with Parkinson's, I've helped people with Alzheimer's, congenital heart failure, which is often coded as dying of old age, but, you know, and the body breaks down, that's often congenital heart failure, but those are the biggies. I mean, cancer is really the sort of king or queen of what puts people into hospice care. What I do in my play through the magic of theater, people are able to tell their stories and then break into song, kind of like chorus line, where people do a monologue and make it musical and share it through song and dance. So I do that kind of magic move throughout the play, both for a bunch of solo songs and some duets and ensemble pieces as well. And then there's some songs that are not drawn directly from the stories coming out of the bed. There's songs about the relationships. There's songs about dealing with grief or dealing with hope, finding hope in the face of grief and so forth. So we try to cover a lot of that material in a lot of different ways.
Very cool. Yeah, I was looking at looking through your website, but I was also looking at the little preview that you guys have on YouTube, and that was really, it was very nice to see, like I said earlier, see somebody giving some joy to what is normally in people's minds a negative situation.
Yeah, for sure.
How did you kind of come about understanding that it's a very complex idea to understand that it doesn't have to be a horrible situation, right? So how did you kind of come to the understanding yourself that you can move on, and it's probably even healthier to move on while you're joyful, while you're content, while you're happy? How did you realize that?
Well, for me, my connection to hospice goes way back to my youth, in an indirect way. My beloved grandfather, Bernie, may he rest in peace, or may his memory be for a blessing, as the Jews like to say. He died after sustaining an injury in a fall that I witnessed, which was a terrible thing to watch.
Okay.
And then he was hospitalized for 8 or 9 months, leading to his death. And what happens for so many old people, they got hospitalized after one small injury, and then one injury becomes a bigger injury, and instead of things healing, they snowball. And this was not just a family member, a grandfather who I was fond of, but in his younger years, he had worked for the Parcel Post. That was the historical antecedent to UPS back when UPS was invented and the Postal Service did all the packages. So my grandpa was in his pictures from his youth, he was a very strong, muscly guy, right? And I think we are all kind of proud of him for being this hardworking, strong guy, not just physically strong, but, you know, sort of took care of his community, you know, working class New York City neighborhood. And he was the postal guy. And, you know, like,
right, right.
I, I've always observed that, yes, people of all genders are proud, can be hopefully proud of their bodies and so forth. But there is a particular thing to the cisgender hetero man as he's like talking about work and talking about, you know, doing stuff with his body. And I'm totally like that. Like, I'm a guy's guy. I love this afternoon. I was working in the front yard and raking, like a manual rake,
right.
Not in any way efficient. It like kicks the crap out of your body. It's so difficult, but it's also like really, really rewarding when you rake a section of your yard like that. And like, I kind of love the feeling.
Satisfying.
Very satisfying. Right. So anyway, like Bernie was held up as a paragon of both physical strength and being a beloved member of the community. People just loved him. Okay. So when he died, you know, people came out of the woodwork to attend his funeral or the memorial service. There was so much love for this guy in, you know, from whatever, Rockaway, New York City, where he'd lived and worked for so much time. But also, you know, I think part of the sadness in watching his decline had been how this sort of beast of a man had been so diminished. And I think a lot of us who have, you know, whether your loved one was physically impressive when they were younger or not, you know, injury and illness and death takes a real toll on a healthy person, you know, says Captain Obvious here. So like, I remember the feeling of watching Grandpa Bernie diminished over these many months where we would go into New York City to see him in the hospital. And unfortunately that it really, it was devastating for my father to watch. And he really suffered having seen this and, you know, not able to, you know, part of the pain for a lot of people. We were talking a moment ago about acceptance, right? So when you're the loved one watching your beloved in that bed, getting worse instead of getting better, losing their memory or their cognition, you know, like there's a real feeling of helplessness, a real feeling of, I've heard a lot of people talk about being lost at sea. You know, people are really feeling feelings when they slip into metaphors. I talk to metaphors all the time because I'm a playwright and a songwriter. But like when regular civilians start talking in metaphors, you know, they're having some kind of deep experience, right? And one of the metaphors that's really common in chaplaincy, or just people in distress, they talk about being in the wilderness.
Right.
And
being kind of in a not so much a void, but like a very empty space. Like there's just a lot of stuff, but none of it's there. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter.
That's one way to understand the wilderness. For those of you who are biblical scholars, you know, for the Israelites, being in the wilderness was 40 years of traveling without getting where they wanted to go. So find ourselves in the wilderness, metaphorically, it could be that in-between space. Some people think about serious illness, aging, and death as moving between one place and the so-called promised land. You know, a lot of my favorite African-American spirituals talk about crossing over River Jordan to get to the promised land. Whatever the metaphor is, the chaplain's job is to sit with the person and invite them to be comfortable in their prayerful moment, in their moment of anxiety, even if that's where they're feeling, and try to get to somewhere approaching peace.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, I have personal experience with death, you know, with my parents and things like that. And for me, it was realizing that they wanted to be remembered, not so much as how they were when they were passing, or when they passed, but how my interaction with them the whole time was, you know what I mean? So like when, for example, my mother died, I was young and it took me a long time to deal with that type of grief. But what ended up happening was I realized she would want me to live a great life and have a whole bunch of, you know, dreams and things for me. And my best way of remembering her and allowing her to be at peace is to just do the best I can and see where those dreams go.
That's a wonderful, you know, way to honor her memory.
Yeah. And it's for me, that's, you know, the ability to just realize, like you were saying, that even though that moment is past, this moment right now is the same moment as before. I just get to choose what I'm thinking about it a little bit differently. You know what I mean? So I just kind of allow what's going to happen. Yeah. And it's an interesting way of living, I guess I'll say, but yeah. So, but I do want to ask you a little bit more. So the play, are you doing performances again yet?
Thanks for asking. Yeah, we're in an exciting time right now. It's, okay. I guess we can say we're making connections, we're making plans, and we're doing some small performances in people's homes. I'm actually planning a couple of mini tours for next spring. One's going to be in and around Chicago with appearances. Okay. With some family who are there, with a synagogue that's there, and I'm hoping to add a few more. And there will also be a New England appearance, Boston, and some of the communities around there. That'll also be next summer. Okay. I've got appearances locally in the meantime, and I want to let your listeners know that if you find the conversation about this topic interesting, if you check out the website and you like what you see, there's a form where you can fill out and be in touch with me. The cool thing about the one-man version of the musical that I created during COVID, it was a condensed version of a longer ensemble play. That one-man show, while it was created at a time that I just needed to make something short and make it fit on the computer screen, it turns out it was a real godsend because now I've been able to perform this work at a Fringe Festival. I was at Asheville Fringe last spring, and that was wonderful to bring it to live audiences. And Captain Obvious here again says it's simpler to bring my one-man show to a given place or appearance than it is to arrange a whole ensemble cast. So there's some nice possibilities there. So if you're listening and you love theater, you know, the dream is to partner with a small or medium-sized theater to stage the work in some kind of way in the coming year or two. But short of that, I'm happy to make appearances for whoever would be happy to have me. And that includes schools, institutions of higher learning, healthcare places that do trainings, cultural entities of all types, synagogues, churches, mosques. Be in touch, and I'd be happy to tell you more about the project and how we can learn and share together.
And do you mind kind of just talking about the what the website is, or any medias?
Happy to share about that. Yeah. So the website is called lifereviewmusical.com, LIFEREVIEW musical.com. Instagram at lifereviewmusical. And I'm pretty active there. The website is great because when you land there, there's right on the landing page is that trailer video that you were talking about. So if you're curious, listening to me talk, and you want to see and hear a bit more, That trailer video is going to show you lots. And you can also explore our rather long and winding road of creating this project. We're now 10 years running, so it's something of a study in persistence. But, you know, despite that, I'm really excited to be making plans now for, you know, a November house concert and traveling out to Chicago and Boston next spring and summer. So, you know, it has taken a really, really long time to get to this point. And of course, COVID did slow things down.
It
did for everyone in theater and music. But, you know, there's been some unexpected blessings. I think that's a different kind of a Buddhist teaching about how suffering can be a teacher. And for me, I actually went on a podcast where the entire topic was adversity and going through adversity.
Okay.
And I framed the whole conversation about how much struggle it was to have this play, the dream kind of taking off and then shut down by COVID. And it really was. I mean, I felt kind of heartbroken. I mean, I didn't see when everything shut down, of course, like everyone, I didn't see the possibilities that were there in front of me on the laptop. I just didn't have the imagination yet. But boy, once I was able to get through it, not only did I create this one-man show version, I was able to perform it 10 times, including benefit performance that raised some nice money for my project and a charity. And one appearance that I felt rather sentimental about, it was the large Jewish elder care facility where I had done chaplaincy training. So they brought in the work and they kind of piped it in through their their like local access cable system inside the residence.
Oh, okay.
So all these hundreds of residents were able to see the show in their room, which was special for me to know about. There's lots of different ways, again, because of, you know, we were laughing before about how the people in the bed don't want to be in the bed and painful and frustrating, and you can't be anywhere but the bed. And I think I'm sitting from this space that is my basement office. It became, of course, my basement classroom when I was full-time teacher teaching quarantine. Mm-hmm. And I've got the fancy mic set up so I could do blah, blah, blah. But like, I remember the feeling of not wanting to be here. And even when I did those performances, it was nice to perform, right? But like, of course I would have preferred to be live and in person, of course. No one wanted to be stuck at home. No one wanted to be scared of the virus, but we were living through that. And
that's one thing we all have gone through. You know what I mean?
We all went through that time together.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mentioned in passing the Asheville Fringe appearance. It was so exhilarating to be live in person, even though it was like a kind of a small venue. It was perfect for who I was. You know, 30 or 40 people like laughing when they're supposed to laugh and crying when they're supposed to cry and cheering on their feet at the end. Like that just felt so good for me in my heart. And what a nice boost for the project. I think all of us who have been apart from one another, we've had these moments when we're back together in person, face to face, and it just makes all the difference.
There's a few people that I've recently got to see that I haven't been able to see in, say, about 3 years now, just shortly before everything happened. We just finally, and that feeling is there, you know what I mean? That feeling of whatever the heck just happened, but all right, where are you at? You know, like you want to be there for them almost instantaneously.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Well, I really enjoyed chatting with you, and I hope that you'll come back on and everything, and maybe in a little while we could find somewhere down here for you to come and perform. So
remind me where
down in sunny Florida.
All right. I gotta be honest, I've got some mixed feelings about Florida, but
yeah, it's a rough state.
You're trying to bring the peace to there, so that's good. I appreciate bring a little love to where things are a little bit hairy. But yes, yeah, I would love to bring my work to Florida or wherever else people are interested in having me. And I do hope that its message, we were talking a lot about acceptance, and that is the work that may be the most difficult for the patients and the loved ones, right? But here's something that is more difficult that we can all work on with sincerity and with open hearts, and that's being present. No matter, how about this? While acknowledging that the hospice in particular and the hospital and the nursing home more broadly, these are places that no one really wants to be. Let's be honest.
Right.
We all wish we could stay healthy and young forever. And no one wants grandma away in a home. But sometimes she needs to be because she can't care for herself or she's losing her memory or whatever. Right. But they are. And so what we can do, we cannot stop time. We cannot reverse the effects of aging, despite the claims of expensive creams and so forth. I think they mostly work on the power of suggestion and moisturizer.
Well, you don't think Neuralink's going to fix all that? No, I'm just kidding. But I agree with you, though.
But that thing about acceptance, about being where we are and being okay with it, it's for the person who's going through that aging or illness or dying journey, and their loved ones. And, this can be a very, very complicated journey. So what is the easy thing, despite or slightly easier thing? If not arriving at acceptance, it's arriving at bedside. There we go. It's showing up.
There you go.
Right? You don't have to be deep and spiritual like the chaplain. That's their job. If you want to do a little praying, great. If you want to just put on some groovy music, or if you play a musical instrument, bring it and play it at the hospital or the nursing home or the hospice. People will be so happy. If you sing a song or a few, people will be so happy. Yeah. So that joy that you bring through music and the quiet serenity you bring through your presence, that is a true blessing that you can share with others in their time of need. I encourage people to be brave about it. Maybe if you're listening and you hear me say blah, blah, blah hospice or blah, blah, blah visiting a nursing home, if you're younger than say 50, you might be like, heebie-jeebies.
Right.
No, thank you. I'm going to catch death and dying. First of all, the stuff that gets you into a hospice or nursing home, it's generally not communicable. If you've got something that you can actually catch, it's hard to get visitors. The thing is, it's not about you. It's about them. And that's, honestly, a lot of what we do in life to help other people is slightly uncomfortable or slightly inconvenient for us. I recently, a few weeks ago, a dear beloved friend of mine died, a music teacher of an older generation, but something of a father figure, called him periodically to talk about music teaching and would always visit him when I went home to town. I'm bringing him up because, his death did not occur at a particularly convenient time, as deaths never do. But I dropped everything to go to my hometown and be at this funeral, be at the memorial service and all that. And I was talking about it, getting ready to go, all distraught, talking with my wife about it. And one of the things I said, I was like, you know, funerals and memorial services, they kind of stink. No one really likes them, but we need them. The people who are surviving, like, it's not for the person who's going in the ground. Unless you literally think, if you literally believe in like ghosts and that the person is floating over that memorial service, then okay, maybe. If that's your belief system, and I'm not poo-pooing it, if that's your belief system, then the memorial service is also for the dead person. But if your belief system does not include like some sort of sentient, paying attention, ghostly,
being there,
they're not there, and then the service is really just for the survivors. The service,
right?
And honestly, this that I should say, since I'm bringing it up, I want the listeners to know that this was one of the most beautiful memorial services I've ever been to, and I've been to a lot in my day. Mostly because this is a musician who had many beautiful music friends playing some really incredible stuff, some classical, some jazz, some singing, just wonderful. And when it ended, they did one of those New Orleans style marching band lines where they had the brass playing and everyone danced around. And then it was done, and then it was quiet, and then people cried more. But it was still so joyful and so, you know, expressive. You know, we can't all get that kind of send off, but I do believe that having people you love and then having them die can have a wake up call kind of effect. It feels a little bit cliche to say, but there's a reason why the near-death experience is known to have like a shock you back to life kind of effect for a lot of people. Right. You know, I missed getting killed in that car crash, and now I got to do something. Not always, but a lot of times people get kind of jolted. You know, I've been at this music teaching game long enough that I don't know that I need a jolt per se, but you know, this was a man who lived to the hilt, but not for the finer things or the pleasures of life. Certainly he enjoyed beautiful artwork and he enjoyed music and tasty food. But he mostly lived life for the benefit of others. A major force in community service. He got public housing built in a posh part of the Hudson River Valley where it's very hard to live, you know, because he believed in affordable housing. And he gave food to homeless people in New York City and on, like, just amazing work. So for me, that part of the message of his life was to use your days with wisdom and see how much you can fill in there. Cause there's so much hurt and pain in the world. And when you bring joy and love to people authentically, as I can picture him doing this day, I remember all the way back to high school when I went with him on these trips to New York to meet homeless people in the middle of the night and give them lunches and, you know, warm bread and stuff. And when he did these mini trainings, he'd say, yeah, it's important to give everyone the food and the clothes, but the most important thing is to say hello and shake hands and introduce yourself, because these are real people. They're real people who happen to be down on their luck, so they're they're living on the street, but they're real people. That message is so important as we navigate the world and we encounter the other. As we encounter those who are suffering with poverty or illness or injury, that we remember that despite whatever feelings of disgust or revulsion we may have, you know, maybe they're unkempt or a little bit messy, dirty, to also remember they are but an imperfect reflection of a holy God. They are a walking version of an angel. We just forget to notice it.
The way I practice that, the way I see that is, not only do I see them as the reflection of God and other astral, you know, spiritual things, but I also see them as a reflection of myself, right? Because there's a Bible scripture, and I don't know the exact where at, but it's, "For the grace of God, there go I." And I learned that when I was in recovery. And that's one thing that really like stuck with me, was that if it wasn't for maybe something that God is doing right now in my life, there's where I could be. So why would I want to treat that person any worse than I would want to be treated? You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely a lot of, the aforementioned zigzags, and sometimes a zigzag into a ditch off of the road. So I'm glad, despite all that, you've made it this far and made it healthy and in relatively one piece. How do you like to wrap up these beautiful conversations, my friend?
Well, usually just the standard, you know, asking for all your contact info, just kind of briefly again, and then we'll cut out after that.
That sounds good. Well, if you guys want to get in touch with me, my website is lifereviewmusical.com. Again, that's life, L-I-F-E, review, R-E-V-I-E-W, musical, M-U-S-I-C-A-L.com. That's all one word. And when you jump on there, you'll see a terrific trailer video. There's also a form you can get in touch. We've got a nice history, an oral history of the project, all 10 years of it. And we'd love to hear from you on Instagram at Life Review Musical. And again, you can message me there. And I would love to hear from you,
folks. We'll also include those links in the description and everything, so that they're a little more easily accessible too.
Thank you for being high tech and helpful, both things.
Yeah, but I try. I don't know so much about the high tech, but try to be helpful. So, but definitely thank you so much for coming on.
It's been a real joy. Well, you, a blessing.
And I hope you have a great evening. And I look forward to talking to you again.
Thanks so much for the conversation. God bless. Take care. Right. Bye-bye.
You too. God bless. Bye.